Mara, do you have an opinion on why this very successful organizing effort differed from other initiatives where the government and or corporations are trying to enact repressive laws and policies? In other words, was it the matter of timing, the confluence of current events, or was something else going on here?
I think this is really a demonstration of what can happen when you do have a strong, united, progressive, and uncompromising approach. And that was really crucial here. There were some entities, some civil liberties entities, that actually were taking a compromising position with the government. They were actually agreeing with the Trump administration on a couple positions that they were putting forward, including the ban on sustained vigils and protests, including an elimination of the 24-hour rule that basically would have put protest applications in limbo and made it impossible for groups to organize, because if you don't know you have a permit, you can't tell people, come, we're having a demonstration, and start building your demonstration. You just sit there waiting. So the fact that this larger coalition of organizations and groups decided that they were going to take a completely principled position, an uncompromising position, and fight all of these challenges, because it wasn't just, you know, an overt protest tax. They had actually written into the regulations more subtle ways that they could create intense and overwhelming costs on demonstrations. So sometimes with this administration, as we know, they come out with the most extreme, over-the-top plan, and people fight the outer edges of it and declare victory, but it's a victory that can be sometimes just a thin victory, whereas here it was crucial to not take that position, to fight the entire thing to its root and end it, and that's what we did here.
What would have happened, you think, had the government got away with this?
If the government had gotten away with this, it would have meant that the only people that could afford to mount protests in Washington, D.C. would be the extremely well-heeled, well-funded organizations, including, you know, right-wing organizations like the anti-abortion March for Life people and others that have huge funding. But for grassroots groups, the people with the least ability to have a voice, those who can't buy time in the mass media, those who don't buy off politicians, those who really have to fight with the mass number of people who can come into the streets and make an issue a dominant issue, they wouldn't have been able to organize. And the costs would have been extraordinary. The other elements to this that are structural elements, like the rule that I keep mentioning, you know, a prime example of the 24-hour rule of this not sitting on permits came about last year when the Nazis and the Klan wanted to have a celebration event basically in Lafayette Park on the anniversary of the murder of Heather Heyer in Charlottesville. And groups in Washington, D.C. decided that they were going to organize a counter-demonstration, but it had to happen quickly because the announcement of the right-wing rally had come quickly. If this rule hadn't been in place, they wouldn't have been able to do it. And what they were able to do was to quickly put in for an application, immediately begin organizing, and in the end, they had 15,000 people in front of the White House, and the Nazis had like a dozen. And if that hadn't happened, they wouldn't have been able to overwhelm them. The Nazis would have been able to take that space. They would have been able to declare victory. But instead, because of this 24-hour rule, because groups could immediately organize, and there were many groups who were saying, oh, don't come to the White House, go somewhere else, people needed to be able to say, we have a permit, it's lawful, it's a peaceful presence, you can come, we're going to have mass safe organizing, and that allowed that space to be taken by anti-racist, anti-fascist demonstrators. That's a clear example of what happens with the rule in place. If that rule was gone, Nazis would have had the day in front of the White House.
If listeners are joining us just now, we're speaking with attorney Mara Verheyden Hilliard from the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund in Washington, D.C., about the successful rollback of repressive Parks Department protest regulations. Mara, a few minutes ago you mentioned environmental protests that are happening. Can you speak briefly about efforts to use the so-called necessity defense in court? There have been a couple of occasions, I think, where judges are letting that defense move forward. Your thoughts on what the continued future of environmental protest might look like in this country?
The protests over climate change and environmental justice are really at the core of what is driving the anti-protest laws around the United States. So we're seeing the fossil fuels industry attempting to shut down protest. A lot of this, if not most of this, is being funded by the Coke industries, who, as I mentioned earlier, have placed their guy in the solicitors, who's now the solicitor, which is the top lawyer at the Department of Interior, which was the entity behind the laws in the District of Columbia that we have now defeated. And around the country, they're trying to put in these anti-protest laws. So climate justice activists are taking to the streets, and in instances where they're being arrested also for nonviolent actions and nonviolent civil disobedience actions, and they're being prosecuted, there have been efforts and successful efforts in some jurisdictions to put forward what's called a necessity defense, which is the argument that you might have broken the law, but that you needed to break the law for a greater threat of harm that was going to befall people if you did not do so. And some judges have been allowing that to go forward. If you can get before a jury and a fact finder and say, okay, yes, maybe I took this action that stopped a pipeline from being able to operate, but I did so because had it operated, the danger and the damage would have been so extraordinary. The juries are willing to hear that. And if you can tell a jury, if you find that the danger and the threat so outweighed the action such that the action was necessary to prevent that danger, then you can exonerate the person. Juries are going to say, okay, yeah, like what this person did was good and it was right.
I just read that the oil pipeline that the protesters tried to stop in the Dakotas had a break, and they spilled 250,000 gallons of oil. And it seems to me that that's the kind of thing that people anticipated and would have required a necessity defense.
Right, and the folks who were water protectors who were trying to stop the KXL pipeline and others who have been demonized, brutalized, criminalized, arrested, injured, they were trying to stop this from happening. I mean, the headlines were, I mean, ironic but not funny, that said, you know, Keystone Pipeline shut down after 383,000 gallons have poisoned the earth. Well, it should have been shut down before that happened. That is the point of a necessity action. This is what people are saying, that these pipelines are going to destroy the land, the water, the air, the communities that live there. They're destroying sacred lands upon that are, you know, the lands of indigenous people. And people are trying to stop it from happening. And now you can see what happens. We're seeing time and again the danger to humanity, in addition to just the use of fossil fuels and what that's done to our environment and to our climate.
Mara, that's a fitting note on which to end. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but how can listeners learn more about your work and the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund's work?
We would love for people to come join us in this work. You can come to justiceonline.org. That's justiceonline.org. Or our Twitter handle is at VPCJF, that's VPCJF, and sign up, and we will keep you updated about key fights that are happening and where you can join in. I mean, this shows that when we are working together, we can win, and we do win.
Congratulations to you and the partnership, Mara. Always a pleasure.
Terrific, Mara.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, keep causing trouble.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Good trouble. Thank you.
Take care.
Take it easy.